This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mook Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mook Delivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with Mook Delivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast, covering Ipswich Town since 2015. I'm Richard Woodward and you are tuned into a special show looking into football insights, football analytics, whatever you want to call it, with someone on the inside, someone with the inside track. Ravi Mistry, how are you? Welcome to Blue Monday.
Hello, yeah, great to be here. Great to be here. Doing well, thank you. It's a slightly sunnier day than yesterday, so all good.
I managed to avoid thunderstorms and torrential rain and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, nothing here. Just stair-rotting rain yesterday, really. But No complaints from me.
Good stuff. And we'll kind of pry a little bit into your professional life in a bit. But this is a topic that is always going to inspire a little bit of conversation.
For sure.
There are kind of people like me who think they've got a little bit of an understanding and quite like statistics and quite like to see trends and quite like to test our understanding of what we're seeing with our eyes, perhaps with some metrics. We're going to be using these called kind of buzzwords, so if this is not your kind of thing, then maybe dial out now. But if you're if you're nerds like me, and presumably Ravi as well, then this is the show for you. I kind of think this is like magic, really, because there are people who just want to be excited and mystified by the magician, and there are people who want to understand how the trick is done, and actually the art of doing the trick is sometimes better than the trick itself. Is that kind of a fair analogy here, or am I maybe making it too elaborate?
No, this is great. I mean, the great thing about when you talk about analytics, someone is either you get the conversation of football's not played on a spreadsheet, or you can't tell me the heart and the fire and the passion in a player by just looking at a number, which is true, 100% true. Football isn't played on spreadsheets, and it's one of these things where it's not an equation, right? Football isn't an equation to be solved. It's something where there is just a lot of chaos going on, and you're trying to make sense of the little pockets within it. And that's where I see analytics as the really cool thing and the really interesting thing to me. For me, it gives you that objective view. So, for example, I'm not a massive fan of Norwich, but it takes a lot for me to think Wes Hoolahan is a good player, right? It's through gritted teeth, I'll tell you that. Now, as an objective opinion, if we as fans have biases, then of course people that work in football as well, scouts, managers, players, will all have their own biases as well, and their own, we see a snapshot of what's going on through cameras, through our own eyes. But what data will give us is that objective opinion. So in some ways, it's a bit magic. It's a bit black box, but there's some level of rigor that goes in behind it. Just because I think that XG is a better measure of shot quality than just the number of shots you've taken in a match. doesn't mean I'm not yelling shoot when Kolsky's got the ball outside the box, right? Like,
yeah, 30 yards out.
I know there's a better pass and there's a better movement towards the goal, but I still want that Thunder bastard, right?
Yeah, and you know statistically, Kolsky's has scored one goal in X number of appearances, exactly. So the probability, even if he was to shoot, was to be low. I mean, the other thing I guess we need to talk about, and this kind of introduces quite neatly your role and who you work for, which I'm sure you're going to give us a little tidbit about, is this a multi-billion pound industry. It is. Where, as you said, the gut instinct and intuition kind of doesn't fly. And anyone who's seen Moneyball, there's kind of that symptom there. But football, as much as it pains us as purists and people who love the game, these are million-pound transfers in certain circumstances, certainly in the Premier League. And you, at the very least, even at League One level with Ipswich, you know, something like Y-Scout is going to still have standard metrics that allow you to understand how effective someone is in the role that they do. And that could, and then obviously the sophistication of that only increases. So there's a recruitment angle, but there's a performance angle. I mean, and for me as well, as I said, and we'll come on to this, we kind of did a poll last week, and just to kind of test some thoughts about the kind of things that we've talked about on the podcast and certainly on Twitter and down the pub and what have you, things that we've seen with our eyes that maybe we couldn't fathom in reality, and whether that was something that is repeatable and that kind of stuff. So we'll come on to that quickly. Ravi, just tell us about your role and what you do.
Yeah, sure. So the great thing about choosing your job title is you can make it as sound as fancy as you want, right? So my job title is Senior Football Intelligence Manager at the City Football Group.
Right.
What that really means is, so I work for the City Football Group, which is the parent ownership group of Manchester City, and then 10/11 clubs around the world that we're partnered with or have an investment in. The great thing about that is every day I'm not just focusing on one club and one team. I'm able to think about, well, you've got Manchester City, this big behemoth over here, but then you're thinking about Lamel, who in Belgium, or you're thinking about Yokohama in Japan. Mumbai City was one that I worked with quite closely last season, which was great fun to be a part of that journey.
And yeah, Russell Osborne, he was big on the Indian League. So yeah, can imagine how exactly. Exciting. New York is another one, is it? Is it New
York? Yeah. New York, yeah. There's Troyes in France, Girona in Spain, Montevideo in South America, Uruguay, and then Bolivar is a partner club as well.
Wow.
And then Melbourne, of course, in Australia. So you're working across all these different teams and they've got different needs, right? Like it's almost easy, inverted commas, to think who's the best player to sign for Man City or who the academy players. But when you're thinking, right, who could fit as a nice jigsaw piece for Girona, or what's the best next move for Mumbai? It's a different piece of the puzzle. So my role is working across all those clubs. And as you said, the football performance, human performance, sports science, talent management, that side of things for sure. But I also do the educational pieces for our practitioners. So I'm enabling them to understand things that, you know, we're going to talk about in this show, so they're understanding it better, so that we're able to have a positive impact on their performances.
Cool.
So that's my day today. It's the dream job, right? Like,
yeah,
it's a job that didn't exist 10 years ago. You know, 10 years ago, I was a football manager addict, and it didn't really come into play in my mind that this could be a real job. And since then, I started blogging about Ipswich. No one really blogs about Ipswich, right? Like, you see a lot more analytics now than you did back in 13, 14, 14, 15, when I was sort of tapping away on my computer and sort of doing stuff in Excel, and then found this thing called Tableau, and sort of everything snowballed from there and got really good at just conveying insights and data to people, mainly in business to start with, before then, last year making the move into football.
And I think as you said, I think there's probably a good 3 or 4 Twitter accounts now dedicated to kind of putting Ipswich Town stats and data and stuff like that out there. But as you said, I think we've known each other on Twitter for a few years.
Yeah.
Steve as well. Steve, I've forgotten his surname, blimey.
Jackson,
Steve Jackson. So there have been always people out there, and, you know, even Statman, I guess it's not kind of the kind of analytics stats, right? But it's the kind of old style traditional kind of Rothman football yearbook kind of stats about historical trends, which are almost just as important as the kind of real-time stuff that we're talking about.
It's a good point, Ryan, and that's a great segue, because it's really easy to think about the data revolution as quite a recent thing, but that sort of, I always think, poo-poos on what a performance analyst, a video analyst and sports scientists have done since the 90s. You know, we talk about McLaren and his work at Prozone before he went to United, and just counting stats are still relevant within the same frame, right? Because if you start off with just, I'm watching the game, then you say, I'm able to watch 10 games at once because I can see the outcome and the goals as they go in. Then you're able to add in, I don't now know how many shots people had or the number of passes. Like, all of these are pointless without that context and what you're trying to do with them, what you're trying to do with these numbers. So everyone that says it doesn't, you know, the only stat that matters is the goals. Like, well, yeah, but the entire purpose of this is to score goals and win matches, right? Like, you're not looking at this to say, right, let's break the League One record for the number of passes in a possession, right? No one does that. Like, no professional.
Well, maybe thought about it, but
yeah,
maybe just between the back four, though.
Yeah, exactly. It's very different from just the applications, and everything has to have a purpose ultimately. Yeah. And I think you mentioned this before, where the sophistication goes down the pyramid a bit. It's certainly in English football, and that's probably down to investment, in my opinion. But I've always said, get a smart, motivated whiz who can use a laptop and can copy and paste a lot, and like, or find relevant public data sources, or work with vendors like Wyscout or Instat or Opta or StatsBomb, and you'll get enough, right? Like, you don't need much to be better than most of the other league teams in the league.
Yeah.
As the lower way down, but as you move up, you need a bit more sophistication. You start looking in places that other people aren't. One of the early pieces I blogged about was actually why Ipswich struggled to get loan players in, and it's really simple. It's just because it's far away, right? Like, if you look at Premier League teams or like Championship teams that have got promising academies or youngsters that you might want to loan from, they're usually in the Midlands or the Northwest or the Northeast. So if you're telling one of these people, "Oh, come down to Ipswich and play," you're shopping in a different market, really.
How do you explain Billy Gilmore to Norwich then? Presumably, he could have had it. I guess he won't. So, we're going to have all of the. I need to be really careful hosting this chat rather than just chatting with you. But I guess so. For that, in that context, big up and coming player, probably could have picked most teams in the Premier League, possibly the Championship, maybe the SPL, if he wanted to go back up north. So what is the criteria there? Because geography presumably might have been a factor. Norwich is even worse than Ipswich, I'd argue.
Right.
You have to be purposefully going to Norwich to get there, rather than at least Ipswich you could be travelling through.
To Norwich, right? No, the Billy Gill one's interesting, right? Because you're looking at a player who has played a fair number of minutes for Chelsea last season. Like, maybe he's a bit part player, but he's got a solid number of Premier League and even European minutes under his belt. And if you're looking to say, right, let's see how this kid gets on and we want to develop further, you're looking for an environment that works for him. And possibly Norwich were able to offer that, right? Like, I've met a few of the team at Norwich and they've got an annoyingly good setup over there. So it's all of these things play into it, but, you know, Premier League status helps, right?
Yep.
Like, being able to offer a system and that fits what Chelsea want to develop him for.
Style of play. Tuchel and, you know, mates, isn't he, with Farker probably from there.
Exactly.
Days, so, yeah, we won't read too much into that. And it's also a nice way to get me back on track. So, yeah. Right, hosting, good. Right, because one of the things that a lot of people have talked about, and we've had abuse for this, and I'm sure a lot of people have abuse on this, is XG and XA. Mm-hmm. So expected goals and expected assists. This is possibly one where perhaps the perception is this is where data and analytics is trying to make something that is intangible tangible, but it's a subjective measure rather than an objective, like 95% of the other things that we will talk about. But giving just a personal view for one moment, if we take the 17-18 season, because we're gonna talk about this, we might as well start now.
Yeah,
the 17-18 season was punctuated at the start of the campaign by a lot of set piece goals, which are quite low XG because as a very simple measure of an expected goal, if you're stood on the 6-yard line in the middle of the goal, you're more likely to score than if you're 25 yards out on right at the touchline. So I don't think that as a fact is too disputable. You know, there's always going to be the subjectiveness of it's this striker against this team, but ultimately it boils down to a historical assessment of if I plonk you in that position, what are the chances of you scoring a goal as opposed to somewhere else? That's pretty much it, isn't it?
It's that's a rudimentary way of seeing it. So I'll go on record. I hate the name expected goals because it almost gives you an indication that you should have scored, right? Yes. Like, and
it's a chance quality measure, really, isn't it?
Correct. Yeah, exactly. Chance quality is a good way of putting it, because really it's just a better way of understanding shots. That's it, right? Like, if you're taking it to its bluntest level, you're not actually measuring how many goals you should have scored. You're saying between a shot and a goal, there's a lot of blurriness. And expected goals, chance quality, whatever you want to call it, blurs that less, right? So you're able to then say, if I add up all of the shots I had, I've had 20 shots in a game, but 20 shots in a game that are all outside the box will add up to roughly what, let's assume 9-10 expected goals. That's quite high still. But let's say you then take, you only have 4 shots, but they're all in the 6-yard box, as you say, straight in front of the goal. They're going to give you a higher number, right? So it just adds, that's the subjectivity it really adds. So you might end up with a thing where you've got what is a typical XG scoreline that you see those Twitter accounts put out, 1.3 versus 0.7, but the real score was 0.2. It's like, well, yeah, like random stuff happens. It's football, and this is why we love it. And this is why it's not going to, like, one number isn't going to change the game, and one number isn't going to tell you that you're wrong down the pub because expected goals thing.
And XG is not used necessarily for the it's never a secondary narrative. Well, sorry, it's never the primary narrative to the game, but we've all sat in games, 0-0 games, and come away thinking we should have won that.
Yeah,
and to me, XG is just making should that a little have? Bit more tangible, isn't it? You know, so and so should have scored that 1-on-1. We missed a penalty. You know, XG of 0.75 or something, is it, for a penalty or something?
Yeah, but it's, again, if you take a penalty, you should score 8 out of 10 times, roughly that sort of thing, right? That's basically what XG is.
Yeah.
But you're spot on. It's a narrative, and you know, there's even the argument amongst analytics circles that you shouldn't even use single game XG because it doesn't tell you anything. What you want is a good enough sample size to say, are you trending up or down? Basically to say, like, because the more you dig into this, more flaws you find, right? Because if you, then what about opposition quality? What about the opposition setup? Because if you're taking a rudimentary shot from this location, where this is where the goal is, well, what about the fact that you're getting pressed hard by two defenders on your left and the right? Or the fact that there's a lot of distance, but there's also about 6 bodies in the way, right? All of this stuff is where you start adding, and you're like, well, it doesn't matter, because what it should do is it's a finger in the wind to tell you which way the wind's blowing, right? But ultimately, it's just another variable. People put a lot of credence on something that comes from maths, I think.
Yeah, and as I say, it's a nice kind of, there's kind of a sideways, you know, experimental 361s league tables, for example. You know, under Mick McCarthy, you know, we need to chuck his name in there. You know, as I talked about before, the early start of the season where we were winning lots of games, I think there was a trend there of those set piece goals which were low XG. So that's something that if you're always going to get 5 to 10 set pieces, and if Martin Waghorn is always going to take them with bend and swerve and power, much to Dave Diamond's annoyance, because he needs to get his iron obviously before he finds that perfect one, then that's fine. But is that a stable enough platform to build a championship season around? Probably not. What if Martin Waghorn gets injured? What if you don't win set pieces? What if teams get wise to you and they just back off and you haven't got a plan B? So to me, it was never this is the story. It's we're winning matches, we're near the top of the league, that's great. Will it last? Not sure. And I think all it did was give a little bit of credence to those worries. And as it turned out, I know Paul Hurst in 18-19 is whole other story.
Yeah.
But it was our lowest league finish in some time. Mm-hmm. And it suggested that all was not well there. And it played out, didn't it?
There's other factors at play, right? You've got to take into account the squad. You've got to take into account the system. You've got to take into account that there seems to be a timeline to Mick McCarthy teams. And if you don't get the right person next, it doesn't seem to work. I was always a big fan of Mark Warburton or Nigel Pearson being the next man after after McCarthy left, purely because if you think, again, not with any data, just with the eye test, well, you don't want him to play long ball for all the time. You don't want to always go for the channels and win and score from set pieces. You should want to develop a counter-attacking and mixed phase of play, which is what Warburton and Pearson's team seems to do, right? And then you can dig into it a bit further and see what's different. But yeah, it's one of these weird ones where, I mean, if we jump into 17-18 now, one of the two big standout things there was Waghorn and Garner scoring a fair few goals in their purple patches and then nothing. And Bart being incredible, right? Like if we take that into account for both ends of the pitches, you quickly see why things are quite unsustainable. So I'm going to share my screen and quickly go through like just two or three quick things that I've put together.
Sure. I'll just, while you do that, I'll do a bit of hypothesizing on the other side. So Paul Lambert's tenure, particularly the last few months, was punctuated by very low XG games. Yeah. Do you think there's a case to be said there that he was trying to score the perfect goal that he wanted his teams, or was it just we didn't create enough?
Yeah, that's a good segue, because this one here is what I'll start with. This is an app from a guy called Neil Charles. It's the Analyst League Table. It's open to everyone, so anyone watching can play around with this as well. You see Ipswich down here, with one goal a game, one goal against per game over the season.
This is 2021, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Last season. And what you notice is the problem is that you're scoring one goal a game, but you're also conceding the same amount of shots as you are shooting yourself. And again, if you're watching the games, you know that this is happening, right? Like, you know the fact that they're still giving up a fair few shots and they're not scoring or creating as many chances because you're trying to, as you say, split the difference a bit and chase a draw rather than go for a full-blown attack. Now, if we look at the championship for 17-18, Ipswich were kind of weird, right? Because goals per game was quite low at the low end of the table, as we know. Goals against was, again, relatively high. But the biggest one is shots for was relegation levels.
So what's that number? It's quite small. So what
it's
that?
10.2.
Shots per game.
Shots per game, yeah. And then shots against, you're conceding the most in the league. 15.
Five more.
Yeah. So the shot differential per game over the course of a season tells you that, well, the problem isn't that they're not scoring or having sustainable goals. It's, well, actually, Ipswich should be really a bit better. So I've put that into more of a highlight chart here. And yeah, the goal difference per game is about average. But the big problem here is the minus 5.7 shot differential, right? And the fact that while you're average at converting your shots into goals, the biggest number here is the fact that Bart saved Ipswich that season, realistically.
Yeah, player of the season.
Because the defense was giving up so many shots.
Which is strange for a Mick McCarthy team when you think about it.
It is, exactly, because in previous seasons, there were two things that were really poignant. And I talked about this in 2015 when I wrote about Daryl Murphy leaving. The fact is that Murphy and McGoldrick were just absolute shot monsters. They just shoot a lot. And I basically tried to figure out what is Murphy good at and who would replace him. Again, I can share these notes and anyone can read it afterwards. But it was always like you got Cameron Jerome, Troy Deeney, Jan Kermagant. And I basically said Brett Pittman or James Vaughan would be good players to replace, which I was quite happy with when Pittman joined. On this one, I think the interesting thing was if we look at the shots that Ipswich took that year, you actually didn't see too many. If we look at this, there's a fair few outside the box. And what you really want is as many as possible, obviously, within the two sticks to shoot. But ultimately, you're ending up with the open play shots being quite far out, or you know, taking a lot of pot shots, which
there's
don't
quite
end up
a cluster
doing...
around about 30 yards out in the middle, isn't there?
Yeah, and this could be because of defenses with a low block, or like just rushing a shot when you didn't need to, right?
Or you were shouting "shoot" at Cole Suess.
yeah, exactly.
Is he on it? I couldn't. You were mousing over, and the names came up. I didn't see Suess, but
yeah. So the other one was I just wanted to quickly show Waghorn and Garner. Those two were really good at the start of the season. But what if you're a coach, what you could end up doing is sitting with the player and be like, "This is what you did early in the season. You're getting in these areas, and as we know that Garner's quite a good header of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Like if he's not getting service, he can't put his head on it." So again, going back to one of the things that I think was mentioned on the Twitter threads, these things don't really work unless you have the personnel to pull them off, right? And the difference between Waghorn and Garner here is Waghorn's taking a lot of these shots, which some of them might be free kicks where he's getting his eye in.
Yeah.
But realistically, still scoring in similar positions to where Garner is. So this is where you end up with the, as they call it, XG merchants coming in and saying, "We'll just shoot from inside the box," right? But yeah, it's an interesting one when you start digging into it a bit more. But yeah.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect your world online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Well, the thing that we were... I could look at that stuff all day. Is that open source, did you say? Freely available. So we'll put some links out, and we'll obviously share your blog as well. You can see with the benefit of hindsight whether Ravi's predictions or his demands were sensible or not. The key topic, though, and it's a really neat kind of continuation on set pieces, given we talked about Waghorn and how dangerous he was from them in that season, is since then, you know, even the 14-15 season was definitely a pretty prolific season for Christoph Berra and Tommy Smith, mm-hmm. on the end of corners particularly. And for some reason, towards the latter end of the Mick era, but certainly throughout Hurst and Lambert, the goals from set pieces dried up. And even, I think, Paul Cook was bemoaning it. What can we glean from that? Because we presumably were still sending centre-backs forwards,
yep.
which is nice and simple. Mick loved an outswinger, which I read in, it might have been Soconomics or something. Soconomics, outswinging corners are favoured by managers who used to play and once got on the end of an outswinging corner and leathered a header in from,
beautiful.
You know, and yeah, it's generally camera quality goals. What can you tell us about the last few years and the goals drying up from set pieces, Ravi?
Set pieces are a fun one because if you compare, again, if we use the M word and talk about Moneyball, the entire premise of Moneyball and why it's sort of preluded never to be able to work in football or basketball or hockey, which are invasion sports, as they call it, right? The reason it doesn't work is because in basketball, you've got repeated events, right? Like, it's the same thing. It's a throw and a hit, throw and a hit, throw and a hit. And strategies come into it in a different way. Now, the interesting thing is, if you look at football, the only things that are really repeatable are throw-ins, kickoffs, goal kicks, corners, right? Like things where the ball is stopped and you're able to set something up.
Yes.
Which is where you know, you've got the Brentfords where they're talking about their set-piece strategy and all this stuff when they won the league with Mitchell Lind as part of that multi-club group. So what's interesting is, yes, you can do a lot of set-pieces and there's so much science and so many people are analysing them these days. But the problem Ipswich have had is, again, really simple. There's not really a good crosser of the ball. Like Gwion Edwards, maybe, if he can clear the first man or if he doesn't put it out for a corner. But yeah, you've not had the Cresswells, the Waghorns, the Andersons. I think Anderson is, well, he was one of my favourite players when he was here, purely because A, he ran a lot, and I 100% rate wingers that get back and defend. And B, he had such a peach of a right foot. He could always get it in, or like he was able to spot a pass, as well as be pretty good at dead ball situations. So it's always, and again, Knutsen is another one, right? Like vilified for all his defensive issues. And yeah, the long throw never did, really did much. But he was a fairly good crosser of the ball, and he always put it into the box for, again, 14, 15. Murphy, even the second balls that came off from corners for Murphy in the season, for Berra even in that same season. So it, like, and also like the second thing is, it's hard to score from corners, right? Like if it was easy, everyone would do it because it's such an obvious thing. Like if you're getting five or six corners a game, that's fine.
But how do you go from 14, 15 where Tommy Smith got eight or nine goals, possibly, not all from corners, to nothing, you know, pretty much nothing. I can remember a Chambers header from a corner last season, perhaps, and maybe
yeah, I think that was even Chambers kicked it, right? That might have been that sweet half volley that he hit. But it's an interesting one, and I don't think I've got a clear answer on it. But apart from crosses are better, opposition get wise to it. I think when you look at set piece goals, it's always like did they score from set pieces last season? Is probably a common question in performance analysis departments. And if it's yes, it's like, cool, we'll stop them doing it in this match. And if every team starts doing that, it gets harder. But again, it's one of these things where you end up having to reinvent what we're doing at set pieces. And again, yeah, set pieces are hard. It's hard to head a football. I think that's what I'm always impressed by, like players that can always continually head a football.
It's so angles impressive. And, you know, happenstance, really, isn't it? Because I guess what I'm taken from your point is there's a bit of chaos when it comes to a set piece, and potentially what we had in 14 15 was a good delivery, which I think that's number one, your first point, but number two perhaps is an aggression and a willingness to actually try to get hurt and get on the end of it, which someone like Tommy Smith and Christoph Berra, who I think were a gum shield, they're willing to chuck themselves in there because, you know, to borrow a Ted Lassoism, you know, rain down with chaos, chaos. Just, you know, send in the six footers and scare the crap out of everyone. And maybe that's it.
Yeah. And again, this is something that analysis doesn't measure, right? Like aggression, like that team in 14, 15 was full of just scrappers. Like Jay Tab was in there. You had Taro Mings, like big fellas. Your back four was Mings.
Not Jay Tab, obviously. But
yeah, right. Your back four of Mings, Berra, Smith and Chambers, like that's a big back line. And that is a lot of presence in the box alongside Murphy. And yeah, Tab, to be fair to him, has had a pretty big leap on him. But yeah like just proper scrappers. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And maybe Wolfen and Enciala, that wasn't their game, you know?
And I think that's an indication of sort of where the game slightly starting to change. You're getting a lot more ball-playing centre-backs than you are like the tough boys. So yeah, maybe that'll change.
Webster didn't score many, did he? Sorry to jump in.
No, Webster didn't score many, but again, his distribution was incredible. Like, he was so good on the ball, and it's this development where the more you start playing out from the back, the more you're wanting that sort of player rather than a Ashley Williams who'll just hoof it as long as he possibly can when a ball comes near him.
That's an interesting insight. So potentially our conclusion is that Smith and Berra were a little bit of a throwback under maybe a little bit of an old school manager. And Alan, we had Alan Lee on, and he was talking about the evolution post-McCarthy, even with McCarthy trying to play out from the back, and how that was a little bit foolhardy. But actually interesting that the consequence is there's a lack of potency in the dead ball situations at the other end of the field when you rely on the centre-backs. It's interesting.
Because, again, if you look at if you break this down probabilistically, a cross doesn't give you as many shot opportunities as a pass. Because with the shot, it's high, and it's easy for a keeper to catch or something like that. But a cutback or a pass, you can generate more power to shoot, right? Again, all of these things factor into maybe it's just people don't want to cross anymore, and you're seeing crosses go down.
Sorry, just to jump in there, because the club, we started taking short corners, didn't we?
Yeah.
Is that why?
I'm not sure. But again, it wouldn't surprise me, because again, there was this theory that went around a few years ago that short corners are better because you retain possession more.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, well, yeah, but they rarely lead to a goal. So if you just want to continue where you left off, leave your centre backs behind and start from a corner. Sure. Just do a kick in, basically. But don't bring your centre backs forward if you're not going to put it into the mixer. which again, makes me sound completely archaic and against like everything that analytics in theory stands for. But there is value in having a mixed attack. There is value in trying different things when you're trying to score a goal. And sometimes if you cross it into the box, it goes behind and you're 2-0 up. Great. They have to reset and find the opposition for reset. Goalkeeper sets himself for a goal kick. Everyone pushes back out. Centre backs go back. And you've got a bit more time in that plus two games day. So,
got to be watching Ted Lasso. I'm going to keep saying it. Midnight poutine, a bit of Loki's toboggan. You know, that's rain down chaos. That's great stuff. We need to be really careful. We could go on all night, and I've spoken far too much as well. The great thing about doing that poll, thank you for all the votes on that, and we've even dealt with 17, 18 and XG anyway, so I've kind of...
Flying.
Agenda is whatever I want it to be, that's fine. But we have had plenty of just replies and other thoughts, so I thought we'd go through those as well, if that's all right.
Yeah, sure.
So where do we start? So Dav Blue, where do you see data analysis going in the future? We joked about this beforehand. Skynet.
Skynet, Minority Report. Some of my real answers here would be redacted, because obviously that's what we're striving to do as the City Football Group. But in reality, there's so much that you're still not getting from the data that's already provided, and there's still so much you can gain. And like, again, if you look at the top of the pyramid, you've got all, like, you've got Liverpool, you've got City, you've got other clubs like doing more with analytics. But the lower down you go, the less sophisticated it has to be, and the more gains you can find. Especially when you look at league effects and team effects and different levers that people are pulling. Right, again, if you look at the stuff that people are doing in the Ipswich analytics sphere, looking at squad profiles and how would a player fit in, how's this composition changed. All that's basic stuff. And again, just showing people that information allows them to ask better questions. And for me, that's just not just a football thing, but a data analytics thing. I'm a big purveyor of data literacy and how everyone should get some level of data literacy to be more inquisitive. Like, there was always the joke of the only time people are quite like actively critically thinking is April Fool's Day when they're finding out if something's real or not. So
I've been conned.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas, you know, if you apply that to your day-to-day or even like in my previous life in business intelligence, what you end up doing is finding and helping people ask better questions. So I think there's loads of, for want of a better phrase, low-hanging fruit that you can already get. The forefront, of course, depends on what you can get out of the intangibles, right? Like the things I talked about around, you know, head and heart and intensity and things like this, so...
Yeah, and how you build that as a metric for player recruitment is going to be, that's an interesting one. And is there something to be said for particularly at League One level, and maybe League Two as well, maybe even Championship, is recognizing there's a benefit there, recognizing there is a lot of data that is out there without you needing to prospect it yourself, but just having enough people with the time to be able to do it. A part-time data analyst to me is someone you're relying on to be doing it when they're not doing it as part of their job. It's kind of a hobbyist as well as a... You need people who, A, know what they're doing, but have the time, because there's so much data out there, isn't there? And it's the filter that's the important thing.
The filter and the translation, right? Like, again, it's one of these things where you don't end up solving problems unless you know what you're trying to solve, right? Like, it's great to be like, well, actually, if you hit the penalty down the middle, it's 50% chance of going in. It's like, well, yeah, but you're not going to do that, because not every time the keeper doesn't move, right? Like, they're waiting for you to dive. If you're Jorginho, you're going to wait until he's waiting for the keeper to move before he puts it down the middle or goes to the right. So it's one of these things where you end up like, yeah, I can tell you a stat, I can tell you something somewhat interesting, but if it doesn't matter, then don't bother.
So ask the right question.
Ask the right question.
Give enough people the tools to be able to give you the answer. Yeah. This is I'll read this out because I need to show deference to everyone who's interacted with us. And thank you, Luke, for your tweet. Watch football with your eyes, not through an Excel spreadsheet. We've kind of dealt with that at the start. Yes, we waste set pieces, but that's because we've not had a good set piece taken for a few years. And to be fair, that's exactly what we just said, haven't we? And we didn't need a spreadsheet to be able to do that. So I think, as we've been saying throughout the show, time and place, and as you're saying, context, and use it for the right purposes, not just for the sake of it. Oh, we need to do a Brentford, and we need to do a Moneyball. Next up, Steve. We've talked about Steve already. I'm hoping he's putting you under pressure here. Let's find out. He's looking forward to this one, so hopefully, Steve, we've delivered. I'd be interested in your thoughts on whether ITFC had any data analysis capability prior to the current regime, and how they can now excel in this area at a time when every club seems to be building analytics capability.
Yeah, I mean, as I said before, like, I feel like League One is quite a greenfield site. Like, there's a few people doing it, but it doesn't seem like there's everyone. COVID's been interesting. Like, over the last 12 months, I've seen a lot of job vacancies come out since football stopped, right? It's almost like everyone stops, like, wait, should we be doing something where we don't need to go to games to get some insight, right? Like, all of these things are happening, and sort of as a concertina effect. Did Town do anything before? Not 100% sure on that one. But again, if there's a sports scientist and a performance analyst, they've probably been doing something. But again, sophistication is what you make of it, and a lot of that comes from investment as well.
Any thoughts on the new owners? Because it feels like they're trying to do a similar model to City Group, aren't they? Chat about an A-League club. They've obviously got Danish League club. They've got Phoenix and all that stuff. Is this another City Group in the making? And potentially, is there a point where we need to get some guy in from Citigroup who knows what he's doing? Is this like the perfect job for you?
Not going to comment on the job part, but it's an exciting time, right? Because when the new owners came in and sort of start spotting these synergies, it's like, hey, that is quite interesting. And I'm always cautious whenever any takeover happens. It all sounds very optimistic, and I'm really looking forward to not just the investments in Ipswich and the sort of changes they're making already. But for me, the biggest thing is the investments in the Ipswich Town Women and sort of bringing that closer together, like having the first professional club and the promotion. And, you know, you talked about in the recent podcast, which is great, speaking about sort of Joe. And for me, the women's game is, again, another greenfield site where there's so much you can do because it's unexplored. I mean, women's football was banned by the FA for 50 what? Years.
Is that an exclusive for this podcast?
Yeah, so I think it was after a Boxing Day match where Everton played Liverpool, and it had more the attendance was higher in this women's game than for the men's. So I don't know what happened between then, but it was ruled by the FA to be not, what's the word, appropriate for women to play football. Yeah, not fitting. And then in the 1970s, it sort of came back. So it's always fun to see people talk about the quality of women's football as if it's had the same run up as men's, but it's great to see such investment going into the women's game. And again, representation matters and all of these different things that we talk about, because pushing forward and, you know, getting them to have some games at Portland Road, the doubleheaders they're doing, it's all really positive stuff because it grows the investment, means that they're able to continue the momentum they've had over the few years. But no, I'm really, really excited to see what the group means to Ipswich, because ultimately, yeah, it will live and, like, the project will live and die on the investment, the structure they're putting in. And I think, again, you guys alluded to this, like, it doesn't seem like there were a lot of people doing multiple roles. So putting people to dedicate to those specific roles is only a positive thing in my eyes.
Have you done any coverage for the City women's team, by the way? Because there's some, you know, that is top echelons of certainly in England. Is that covered by your remit as well?
Yeah, so City Football Group have been massive purveyors of an investment in the women's game, like Melbourne City Women, Man City Women, putting those things together. I think all of the news for Man City Women and Men's goes through the main Twitter account with all the followers. And then the Man City Women account is only used for match day. So the play-by-play will be done. Play-by-play is done for the men's team and the men's first team on the main account, and then the women's on the match day account. But every other news story comes through the main account as well. So, yeah, again, it's been a big, big push from the ownership group to be supporters of the women's game. And, I mean, it shows, right, because you've got the Great Britain team and, what is it, 7 or 8 players from Man City. So, yeah.
Yep. Ellen White doing what she does. Yeah,
doing what she does.
Thank you for mention for our podcast with Sophie Peskett and Kieran Stanley, always available on the usual places on YouTube and on the podcast feed. I'd heartily recommend it. So thank you for that, Robbie. Yane's asked us about Hurst and Lambert, the regression to overachieving McCarthy. I think we've probably dealt with that.
Yeah.
Willary, interesting in set pieces. Remember reading Soconomics. It said around 3% of corners ended in goals. It feels like we're even less than that.
Yeah. Most teams are, right? Like, again, you can probably put some numbers on this in a more accurate way, but what you're really looking at is the league average and how many goals would you expect to score in League One from set pieces, and then against teams that are better at dealing with set pieces than others. And a lot of this you can't tell from the data and just a number. You need to watch the video and look at the fact that they've got a massive 6'7" centre-back who just clears everything, or, you know, in our world, it should be a 7'1" goalkeeper that just catches everything that comes in the air, but...
They don't grow on trees. Players come back. Joe from our pod team, interested to know the effect of Brexit on recruitment. And he's asked about the multi-club models. I think we've dealt with that. I knew someone asked about that. I did a bit of a scroll and couldn't find it. So I think we've dealt with that, Joe. But yeah, thoughts on Brexit and recruitment and opportunities or threats?
Yeah, and it's again... Without giving too much away, it's the Brexit rules are sort of in flux a bit, I think. I've not been paying too much attention to it or followed it too closely, but there will be definitely effects, right? Like, I think Joe mentioned the effect with the regulations and in previous part about, you know, the regulations of Van Dijk when it made it to Scotland and things like this. It's like, well, yeah, stuff like that's going to happen. It's quite early days on that. That's the interesting thing, right? Because there will be exceptions and there will be different cap regulations. There was a story, I think, of Daryl Dyke for USA played 20 minutes against Trinidad in January, about 3 or 4 hours before he signed for Barnsley on loan. And he wouldn't be able to get the permit unless he came on and played those minutes.
Wow.
Or something remarkable like that. That I read online, so.
And people know, lawyers know about this kind of stuff as well, don't they? So in the grey, you got to go, you got to read the contracts.
Yeah.
It's still a bit more progress to be made there. Progress isn't the word. Understanding, I'd say.
Yes,
it doesn't feel like progress. Graham Saffrey, what do we mean by worked passages of play? We've been told by fans we have no set plays in terms of when players are live. Or is it more we haven't got the technically gifted players to act more on instinct? Are we too methodical and predictable? Start with the worked passages of play. You kind of these token phrases, which probably mean the same things as stuff we've seen for the last 60, 70 years. But any thoughts on that?
This is probably like a football thing, right? Where you talk about phases and whenever someone mentions phases to me, I always say, well, when does a phase start? Like kickoff. Like, is that the start of the first phase? And then when do you say the phase changes? Is it when you recycle possession and all of these different things? And I'm always wary about, well, what do you mean by passage of play? And really what you mean is where you can think of, well, we got the ball back and now we've held the ball for a while and we're not doing anything with it. And we're just holding onto it and working into a good position. And some of that is you're not moving, the players aren't getting on the pitch, and you're trying to find the right moment to attack, which is why it's mesmerizing to watch Pep City, but also quite boring sometimes. Like, you're just waiting for something to happen.
Yeah, they're 15 minutes long.
Yeah, exactly. So it's sort of like when you talk about passage of play, it really depends what you really mean. But most of the time it's segmenting a match into phases of play and saying this is an attacking phase or a possession phase. And being better at that means just doing more with the ball or having a bit more purpose. If fans control the players, you just attack every minute. So,
yeah, which is difficult to sustain for 90 minutes with only three subs. Jordan McCarthy, is there a gold standard in XG models which everyone uses? Or would there be discrepancies between the models used between analysts? If so, where would these come about? I'm guessing the values assigned to chances.
Great question. And it's a good one because there's just different models that take into account different things and put different weightings. So, like, for example, you'd have a something that takes into account whether it's a headed shot or just says the XY position's here and you take a shot. And then it's compared to every other shot that's been taken from this similar distance and the probability, right? Or you can say it was a headed shot, and head is obviously harder to score. So then that has a lower probability. But then it's a headed shot from a cross or a corner, or what was the situation? Was it one-on-one? So you can start layering more and more into this until you get, like, basically make yourself giddy. But
beast, yeah.
Exactly. But so the gold standard, I mean, Opta have their own, Stats will have their own. You'll see Instat, Widescout, all have their own different expected goals models. Is there a gold standard? Again,
Opta's was the first, was it?
Where does expected goals come from? Sam Green was at Opta, yeah. So he was at Opta for a bit, then went to Villa. I don't know what he's doing now. But yeah, Opta did it. Opta sort of did the first methodology and idea behind it, and it sort of developed and warped, and people have found the issues with it and tried to enhance it best they can since. But again, it depends on what you're trying to do. And as I said, it's not a single game metric. It's
going to say, what would your ideal history, your sample size be for an XG that's worth its salt?
It depends what you're looking at. So if you're looking at trying to find out if a player is just not get, like, Benteke is heralded as the most unlucky finisher in the world because over the last three seasons,
I've watched him.
Great positions he takes up. Just can't finish his dinner. And it's like, right, he's massively underperforming his XG every season. And again, you can either look at a 38-game season, you can look at a 10-game rolling, 3-game rolling, 7-game rolling, whatever you want. And usually what happens is these are tweaked and fit a narrative. So if you're trying to say that since this point and this point, this is the time section I'm looking at, I'm going to look at this over a period of 7 games rolling or 3 games rolling. Because, of course, it depends on whether the player played and how many minutes they played and did they even get a chance? Did they get a sniff? Yeah. So again, it really depends on the time frame you're looking at and the context around the questions you're asking.
And there's always other stats you can chuck in when you're talking about players, like the fact that Benteke is typically, and for one season, certainly the most offside player in the whole division. Yep. And that tells me about his ability. Anyway, Benteke is a one for another day. I said frustrating player because you could get the sense.
Bags of ability.
Yeah, he's got the natural physical attributes, hasn't he? But I'm not sure. Yeah, he's not got the game brain. Joe's added another one in. Joe's super interested in this stuff, and obviously Football Manager, scout, yeah, and all kind of stuff. So he loves this stuff. We talked about this a little bit. Any other thoughts on Lambert's style of play last year? Possession heavy, but lacking box entries. Joe says, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, box entries is a good way to put it. I feel like Lambert was had a high emphasis on wing play, right? Like playing down the wings, moving in and out to zigzag down into the box. But the real problem was there was rarely someone willing to pick up the ball. Like what we expected Judge to be when he signed was this great connector. who can play across the front three, but also between the midfield and attack. And just legs weren't there, right? Like he just wasn't making those runs. He wasn't getting those chances inside the box. And he's another one, right? We expected better set pieces from. I think box entries was a big thing last year. Like you can't complain about lack of chances if you're not actually creating too many and the shots you're taking are from just outside the box, or you're putting a speculative crossing just almost for
the sake of doing it, isn't it? Yeah.
Like just to say, well, I can't do anything, so I may as well put in the mixer in and hope someone speeds in and or it goes in off a defender.
Home goal.
Yeah, exactly. Which again, it's not a bad strategy if it works.
Shrewsbury got an equaliser at home against them for that, I think. Yeah.
Right. So you end up, yeah, you can make some giddy with talking about this stuff, but it really it's just about purposeful possession. And I think Ipswich have lacked that for a while. Since again, late Mick, fall of Hurst, and yeah, probably a lot of Lambert as well, because Lambert was again running quite high on it, looked good, and he was holding onto the ball, but then you realize, well, we're not doing much with the ball. Like, and that's okay when you're trying to hold it and recycle and maintain, but when you're then trying to get inside the box and develop further, it doesn't really work.
It'll be interesting to see Cook's style of play with the players, presumably, that he wants and how that's changed. Certainly Saturday, a lot more use of early balls into the likes of Piggott, which might be a good tactic at League One level. But yeah, fascinating stuff, Ravi. Thank you so much for that. That's all the questions we've had. Is there anything that we've not had a chance to speak about yet that you want to chuck in there? Or should we save some stuff up in case, if there's a feeling that people want to hear more from Ravi? And this could have been a 3-hour epic, but maybe we'll spread it out across the season. But anything you want to chip in before we do some goodbyes?
No, yeah, all good. Thanks for having me on. It's always fun to chat about this stuff. It's something that I've been a big fan of for a number of years, and like I said, lucky enough to turn into a career. But I think the only thing I'd say is there's always space for more people to get into this. So if anyone is watching, be like, sounds quite fun and quite interesting. I think my biggest thing to anyone that's interested in analytics is start writing, start building. There's loads and loads of publicly available data sources nowadays that you can just start finding insight about. And you know, when I'm thinking about who are the next people that we'd want in our team, or you know, that could work for within professional football, it's always show me what you know and show me how you'd apply it and translate it. So I think that's the Braveheart message I'd send at the end of this.
I have a job outside podcasting, can you believe it? I think there's maybe this perception that people get lucky breaks, I don't think such a thing. You and definitely the cliche is right, you make your own luck. Mm-hmm. If you are passionate about something and you're willing to do it as a hobby and put the graft in and do a blog or create a model and share it, you'll be surprised how as soon as you put that out into the world, that people gravitate towards it and help you make it better, but also see what you're doing and might give you opportunities. So I can only endorse that message. Where can we find you on Twitter, Ravi?
So I'm at Scribbler42, underscore 42, I should say. Long story.
There's no vowels in Scribbler either, is it?
I? Yeah, Scribbler with no E. I can't remember. Well, I can remember. This is a weird story about how I got there. But so I've had that account for a few years now. Scribbler42. I've then got a link on that to go to the blogs and
Brilliant. My
Tableau public profile from there.
I think we added you in the poll. We'll add you in the tweets when we put this out as well, so you can find Ravi there. And any predictions for the season ahead for Ipswich with either your analytics hat or just your support hat on?
100 goals, 100 points, right?
HMS Pistol League, yeah.
HMS Pistol League. Yeah, I think it'll be a good year. I think I'm very optimistic. The thing is, I'm optimistic, but also the target is playoffs, right? This is a brand new squad, basically, some of whom have played the style of football Cook once. But yeah, brand new squads, new systems, new styles. Anything can happen. But yeah, 100% HMS Pistol League.
Love it. Let's end with that. Ravi, thank you so much. Just a couple of bits and pieces of plugs for me. If you're watching us on the YouTube, you can see where you can find us there. We're in the usual places. Just to give you a heads up towards a possible live show this week after Colchester. We still need to confirm that, but the flagship show should be back. And you can still find, we mentioned our interviews with ITFC Women and the flagship from this past weekend with me, Seb and Joe, which is definitely worth a look. Also, if you're interested too, as you're all aware, you will have accessed this without the need of a subscription, and we very much will continue that as long as we can keep doing the podcast. But if you do want to support us to keep doing more, if you feel like that would be something that you'd like to do, then there's lots of ways to do that. We put a couple there. We've now got PayPal. You can do that and make it monthly if you like, or use the Acast donation feature, or jump on a live chat when we're doing a YouTube broadcast, a live one, and just send us something via Super Chat. So very much appreciated. Really grateful for the folks who've done that already. Just keeps us going, make sure we cover our costs, and make sure we can do more exciting things like speaking to educated, sensible people like Ravi. So thank you for those donations so far, and looking forward to the big season. And Ravi, I'll let you say, have the final word in a second, but maybe we'll come back as well at some point during the season and just do a check-in as well. But let me hand over to you to say goodbye.
No, yeah, like I said, thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure, and keep it up. It's always fun to check in with Blue Monday.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.